This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
New from Radiotopia presents Red for Revolution, an audio drama about Black love, queer romance, and liberation. Join Jasmine, an 18-year-old navigating her queer identity while learning about her grandmother's secret love affair. Through her discoveries, we're transported back to 1971 to witness two remarkable women embark on a romance that defies all conventions. Subscribe to Radiotopia Presents and listen to Red for Revolution wherever you get your podcasts.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
With the state of today's economy, it's more important than ever to invest in products that last for years to come. As the seasons shift and get cooler, make sure your closet is stocked with durable layers that stand the test of time from American Giant. American Giant's clothes work harder and are wearable season after season. Their greatest hoodie ever made is made from the highest quality materials that are cut and sewn right here in the United States. So you're investing right back in your local community. Choosing American Giant means taking a stand for American manufacturing and hardworking Americans, something other mega corporations don't care about. From fleece to knit, all in a range of colors for versatile daily wear, American Giant delivers everyday pieces designed for everyday life. Feel the difference of quality, made-to-last clothes from American Giant. Get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code STAPLE20.
We're happy to have you back with us on MIP on 89.3. WPFWFM in Pacifica, but we're streaming all over the country. I'm joining you from Chicago today, and all I will say at this time is please keep the Reverend Jesse Jackson in prayer. People are looking for news and stuff to say. Sometimes as Black folk, all we need to say is pray, and that's what we're asking for Reverend Jackson. Only the good Lord knows what will happen today, tomorrow, or the next day. And so we pray for him, and we ask you all to pray for him, please, ma'am, please, sir, as well. And appropriately, being in Chicago, when with Reverend Jackson on our mind, I think it's important to deal with a bit of history today, in the sense that we now have the first elected president-elect, international president-elect, of North America's largest industrial union. That's the United Steel Workers. And joining us, she doesn't take office until March, but we're all hailing her and congratulating her as president-elect. We're happy to have with us Roxanne D. Brown. Madam President-elect, Madam International President-elect, how are you today?
I am doing wonderful, Reverend Mark. Thank you so much for having me on your show today. And just thank you for those incredibly kind words. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's meaningful that you're in that position. I know you were vice president. But talk to us about, we'll get into this. We've got a number of African-American presidents of major unions. And we'll talk about how that came to be over time. But first of all, let's talk about you. Tell us a little bit about you and how you got into the steelworking industry.
Sure. I appreciate that question. So I actually am originally from Kingston, Jamaica, from a little town called Harborview. And my family moved to the United States, New York in particular, when I was 2 years old, and grew up in New York, left. And, you know, I was raised by, we like to say, my husband likes to call us the Amazons. A family of single women, really, who were in healthcare and in dietary aids. And so my exposure to unions was the nurses union and ACME with CSEA in New York. And I left and went to college at Howard University.
Yes, ma'am.
Ran out of money, had to find a job. My then boyfriend, now husband, gave me a car to a temp agency, which sent me to the Steelworkers, to Steelworkers Policy Office in Washington, D.C. the next day. And the rest, as they say, is history.
Wow, that's that's amazing. And what a story. H.U.
Mm-hmm. You know.
Here we go. There we go. Here we go. So how many years have you been with the Steelworkers?
So I, in February 1st, will be my 27th year with the Steelworkers. Wow. Yeah, it flew by.
So, you know, I have to ask this because when we think about steelworkers and industrial unions, you know, oftentimes women don't get enough acknowledgement and enough credit. What was it like? What were some of the challenges you and other women have had to overcome in a union like the Steelworkers?
You know, I think when people think about our union, there's an image that comes to mind that does not look like me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of it's short-sighted because really we are the most diverse union in North America in terms of our sectors, right? We like to say we're cradle to grave and we have everything in between, right? We're so diverse in terms of our sectors. But the diversity of our sectors also lends to the diversity of our membership. So there are a lot of steelworkers that do look like me. We have 50,000 members in healthcare, right? And a lot of them like me are immigrant Black women. We have steelworkers in the steel sector, right? Who are also Black and Latino and, you know, so we're a very diverse union. But yeah, you know, on the whole, we're largely white men.
Yeah.
And so, you know, without question, I've had challenges being a young Black woman in certain spaces in our union, walking into certain rooms where, you know, people may assume that I don't come with expertise or knowledge or chops because of where I'm coming from. But I relish in challenging that notion. I enjoy it.
Yeah. So, I mean, that has to be a big deal for a union of majority white men to elect a Black woman.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a big deal. And again, I think it's because, listen, I cut my teeth in this union in our policy shop, our policy and legislative shop. And I had to learn about our core issues and our core values and fight. I literally spent my entire career fighting on behalf of our members across so many sectors and having the opportunity to fight with them, for them, but then also with them when they came to DC and were with me on Capitol Hill or with me in a meeting with the administration and testifying before Congress or testifying before the International Trade Commission. So they've seen me fighting for them and with them. And so I think it's just a respect. They know what I come with. They know how I fight. They know that I'll fight for them. And so I think it was natural to support me because they know me.
So what are some of the issues right now that the steelworkers find themselves facing, especially in this moment of Donald Trump?
Uncertainty. That's kind of the word of the moment right now is uncertainty. You know, we're largely a manufacturing union, right? So our members are in every sector of the manufacturing economy that you can think of. Quite literally, our members make everything. We're the largest union in the refining sector, steel, paper, rubber, chemicals, cement, you know, the lift glass. The mining in terms of critical minerals and materials and iron ore, we're the dominant union in all those sectors. And every single one of those sectors is experiencing uncertainty right now because of the economic environment that we're in right now with this current administration. You know, I'll give you an example of trade policy. Our union has had to use trade policy because of who we are and who our sectors are. And by that, I mean tariffs. So we've spent the last 40 years actually using tariff policy, strategic targeted tariffs against bad actors to make sure that we stabilize our industries, bring back capacity that's been lost to unfair trade, bring back or stabilize jobs that have been lost to unfair trade. That's been our bread and butter. That's how we've protected our industries, kept them as strong as possible. This current environment of tariffs that are, Reverend Mark, you made me angry today. You're Argentina, Canada. I'm going to hit you with 100% tariffs is not strategic. And it's not the way to use a tool that our members and our union really rely on for survival. And so because of that, it's created so much uncertainty, not just in terms of our sectors, but uncertainty about our ability to use that tool that we've relied on for decades into the future, right? Yeah. So it's complicated. I can go on and on and on. So I'm gonna pause because like there's so many.
We want to deal with all that, Madam President. So tell me a bit about the tariff situation and what that actually does to you all as members.
You know, so our members, the products they make, you know, a lot of them rely on inputs, right? And a lot of those inputs come from elsewhere, right? From overseas. So you're creating pressures, cost pressures on the inputs of the components that need to go into some of the products that our members make, which then raises the cost of the products that our members are making, right? The tariffs against Canada, we are an international union, as you mentioned at the beginning. So we have members in the United States, Canada, and the Caribbean. Our members in Canada also make steel. They also make aluminum, right? And these other, you know, key components. And they're our closest trading partner. And we've enjoyed that relationship for decades. Now, our members' jobs in Canada are at great risk because of these significant tariffs on their products. And their companies cannot compete in the global marketplace with these significantly inflated costs on their products. So that means job loss for steelworkers there. It means uncertainty for steelworkers in the United States as the products that they're making, the cost of those products go up. That's uncertainty for their companies, and it creates economic pressures that it's untenable, you know? And so for us, that uncertainty means loss of capacity potentially and loss of jobs across the United States and Canada. It's untenable. Oh, I think I lost you, Reverend Mark. I think you're on mute.
There you go. Thank you. You know, it must be untenable.
It is.
What do you do about it, Madam President? You're coming in office. You know, Clearly he's completely out of control. There are no, as Sister Kamala said, there are no guardrails. Seemingly there's even a court that's going to let him do, a Supreme Court is going to let him do whatever he wants to do. I mean, without giving too much away, what's USW's plan? What is it that you all think you can do to create some leverage to kind of turn this around and protect your workers?
You know, the way that we have governed ourselves as a labor union, you know, for now, you know, over 90 years, is that we engage. Mm-hmm. We engage at the local, state, and federal level because we are charged to do that on behalf of our membership. We don't care who's in office. We don't care if we're R, a D, an I, elemental, Q, P, whatever. We're going to engage because we're obligated to do that. And so that's what we've been doing. We have been engaging this administration around a set of core issues, and one of those is economic, and really trying to lean into what's in the best economic interest of manufacturing workers and the manufacturing sector in this country. That is what we're consistently doing, and we're having these conversations across, you know, several levels of the administration. We're educating our membership because, listen, 2026 and 2028 are coming. Mm-hmm. And we're educating our membership about who has their backs on the issues that are most important to them. Mm-hmm. Who's ensuring the livelihood that they want right now and the livelihood that they want for their kids and grandkids into the future. And again, no R's, no D's. It is who has our backs, because right. we support who supports us. That is where we stand. And right now in this environment, it's hard to say that it's one that supports steelworker jobs. It's hard to say that it's one that supports workers, just working people to begin with. I mean, outside of the tariffs, one of the things that, you know, I say often is today, you know, today, November 17th, 2025, our members across all of their working places are less safe because of the rollbacks and worker health and safety standards and regulations and policies in this country than they were a year ago, November 17th, 2024, right? And so I can go down the line from healthcare to retirement security to domestic economic issues to trade to safety and health, all of these issues, and point to how this current environment is not supportive of what we fight for. And so that's the kind of education that we're doing with our membership. And just with the administration, we're really just trying to help them to understand the economic consequences of some of the things that they're doing.
No, that's very, very important.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
You know, let's do this, though. Roxanne Brown with us, folks, of United Steelworkers. She is the newly elected president. She takes office in March. You mentioned some of the materials, but let's do this, Rox. I think it would be helpful. Talk to us, talk to audience about what USW workers do and what mm-hmm. products they create mm-hmm. that some of us take for granted in our everyday lives. Because mm-hmm. I think, again, it's, you know, misperceptions about gender. Right. And everybody also thinks, you know, y'all just build buildings.
That's right.
You know what I mean? So, and bridges, I guess. But talk to us mm-hmm. about some of the things we use every day that your workers provide for us.
I love that question. It's one of my favorite questions, yes. remark, and I appreciate that. You know, like I said, we describe our union as cradle to grave, because we mm-hmm. represent 50,000 members in healthcare, including nurses who deliver babies, to grain diggers and casket makers. We represent the folks who make Baskerville coffins and caskets, right? And then everything in between. So your Goodyear tires, your, you know, your Bridgestone Firestone tires, your Michelin tires, your Libby glasses, your Starbucks cups. If you go to the bathroom and you, you know, use, hopefully wash your hands and you use paper towel, that paper towel was made by steelworkers. Your Amazon boxes that come to your home, your wine bottle, your beer cans, your bourbon bottles, obviously your car. You think of the car that you drive in, the glass, the steel, obviously. I already mentioned the tires, your phones, the glass in front of your iPhones, your Androids, is this Gorilla Glass made by steelworkers. You use your phone and you use 5G. The fiber optic cables that are critical for that 5G system to work, made by steelworkers in Wilmington, North Carolina. Wow. The oil that you use to power your vehicle, steelworkers. The cement that goes into our structural buildings, everything. So we don't build. Those are the building trades unions who erect the buildings and the bridges and such. We make all of the things that go into everything. We make all of the things that you use every single day. I'm drinking out of this water bottle.
Right.
Paper, steel workers. Quite literally, you know, everything. Lotion, yep. Medicine. you know, we represent a large amount of membership in pharmaceuticals who make the drugs that are used, some of the COVID drugs. You know, we are, our members quite literally touch every single facet of the economy. We also represent bus, school bus drivers. If you go to Vegas, you hop in a cab, it's a steel worker in a lot of cases. So we touch everywhere in terms of the U.S. economy. You see how excited I was to answer that question?
Yeah, yeah. No, that's amazing. And folks, I hope y'all got that. There's nothing that they don't touch.
Right.
And so, you know, somebody said, "What? Why do I care about a steel worker?" Well, now you know.
Right.
From medicine to lotion.
Yes, that's right.
To paper towels.
That's right.
You know, I mean, these are things that steel workers produce. So that's something very, very important to understand. And, you know, it's likely that many of you listening and watching right now may know or have some interaction or have maybe 1 or 2 degrees only of separation between you and a steel worker.
That's right.
Themselves, because after all, this is the largest of the industrial unions, correct?
That's right. That's right. That is
correct. How many members? Is it a million? Just under a million?
850,000 in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
That's a whole lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And let's go ahead and double that when we talk about families.
That's right.
And it's more than that. You know, 850,000 people all alone by themselves living alone.
That's right.
So these matters impact millions of people and families,
mm-hmm.
contribute to our everyday life and society. You may have touched on this, but I want to just go back over it in terms of what the tariffs are doing, in terms of what some of these policies are doing, in terms of the way it's affecting companies. Is that also affecting wages, and what impact does that have on collective bargaining agreements? Because if you're not making no money, if I'm not making no money to pay you because of tariffs and foolishness,
right,
then you got it right. So, well, hold up, Slick, we got a collective bargaining agreement. So that just, it creates a whole nother level of tension, doesn't it?
Reverend Mark, you ask such good questions, and I can't tell you how much I'm serious. I can't tell you how much, these are the real questions. These are the real conversations we need to be having right now, because this is what people need to understand, right? About the moment. So you're so locked in. Yes. Yeah. No, I mean,
that's those of us who went to Howard. I think that's maybe the thing with us. I don't know.
It's the way we talk. But I go back to the uncertainty. You hit it on the head. If you are, you know, Reverend Mark Steel Company, and you are right now dealing with the economic pressures of the tariffs and the uncertainty of the tariffs, but you're about to go into bargaining with a company, with a union, right, in a couple of months. How are you coming to that table? Because you know how the union is coming to that table. We're coming to make sure that we get everything that our members deserve at that table. But you're coming like, oh, you know, what am I, these are what my books are looking like. This is sure how I'm going to be looking in the next 2 years. So this environment of uncertainty is creating uncertainty at the table. And next year, 2026, is a Herculean bargaining year for us.
Really?
We start the year with oil bargaining, right? And I'll be at the table for oil bargaining in January. Then we go to bargaining aluminum, right? We go to paper, we go to tire. And then we end the summer into the fall with big steel bargaining. So that's some of our major industries as the Steelworkers Union. And so we're going to go to tables, all these companies, tire and rubber in particular. That's a sector that's really having a hard time right now. And so it's uncertainty is going to make it more challenging for us to do the work that we do at the bargaining table. It doesn't stop the work that we do. We're still going to show up because that's what we do. And that's what we're supposed to do.
Right, right.
But it doesn't make it, it makes it more challenging. It just,
So glad we got you now. Now that you told me about 2026, you ain't going to have time to talk to nobody.
It's going to be a busy year.
I knew about these union presidents, y'all. When they negotiate, they ain't got to talk to no, that's real. And that's the real job, isn't it? Because that's some, you know, getting into those, you know, the devils in those details.
That's right.
Let me ask you this then. Mm-hmm. I wonder if there's any affinity or solidarity with management? Because especially in Canada, we know most management don't like Trump either.
Right.
Does that give you all some room to try to come to some more agreeable terms to work through this together? And I say this as a former building rep, so, you know, I follow management all the time, but
yeah.
So I'm clear on that. But does this, because in many cases, both sides are mm-hmm. troubled by him, how does that help you in terms of your negotiation and working things out?
I think it's variable. I think it depends on the industry that you're talking about, the company that you're talking about. You know, when it comes to bargaining, it's every side for itself, right? In most cases. And with these pressures, I think the companies are just trying to hold on to what they can hold on to, right? And there's not, I don't know that there's going to be a willingness to really expand and give workers what they deserve, even in these times. And the reality of the now, and it's always crazy when I say these words out of my mouth, because I never imagined as an immigrant, you know, coming to the United States, that I would utter these words about the United States. But there's so much fear right now that is wrapped up into this current political environment, that even if companies are like hair on fire in this moment, they just don't know what to do.
Right, right.
They're not opening their mouths to say, this is not working for me. They're not opening their mouths to say, this environment is killing me or creating this uncertainty. They're going to try to kill us at the table, but they're not going to buck against this current system because of this omnipresent layer of fear that surrounds that class, the business class right now in this environment. And, It's crazy to even say that. I don't know that there's another time in U.S. history where that level of fear just lived across the ecosystem in this way, not just in the business community, but just across the entire country. No one wants to buck against the current environment because they're afraid.
Yeah, they're afraid. People being bought off is really a shame.
Yeah.
Because it's more of us than them, including management.
Right.
We're all together, you know. So you mentioned immigration, and not a lot of time left. Let me ask you this. How is Trump's immigration policy directly or indirectly affecting your union members?
Again, it depends on the sector, right? We have had a few members detained, and, that's the beauty and the power of the labor movement, too, especially in these times. Again, crazy that I'm even saying these words being here in the United States as an immigrant, but especially in these times, you know, you almost have to map out where the power is and where the helpers are, because the traditional helpers may not be the helpers today. And so for workers right now that are connected to labor organizations, you know, We are a source of help in these times. And so for our members who have been detained, we've been able to step up and show up and provide the resources that they need to try to help them through their situations. Looks different for our union than it looks for others in terms of workers who've been impacted by the current immigration environment. But we've had impacts, and we've just shown up for our members in the way that we absolutely have to. As a union.
Yeah, no, that's very important. Mm-hmm. And what I want to do, I mentioned here, I want to call a roll before we go. Folks, these are, and I think I'm right about this, Madam President, I think I have the list accurate, because it's such a long list. I have to call, some of us call and double check with each other. Some of your colleagues, we get on the phone and say, hey, let's do the count. How many of us is it? These are African-American presidents mm-hmm. of labor unions, which makes all the sense in the world, because, we have been, as Black folk, the backbone of labor for well over a century. Mm-hmm. American Postal Workers Union.
Yes.
Jonathan Simmons.
Yep, brand new.
Milton Jones, United Food and Commercial Workers.
Mm-hmm.
April Verrett, our good friend, SEIU.
Mm-hmm.
Lee Saunders of AFSCME. And so Ask me at SEIU, yo. For those of you know, they like to compete as to which one was King's Union, but he supported both. Ask me was Memphis, literally.
Right. That's right.
Everett Kelly, who was just on with us last week from America for the Brotherhood of Government Employees. Yep. Our good brother. This is a long time struggle to make this happen. It was a victory for everyone. Claude Cummings, president of CWA. Mm-hmm. The largest of all the unions is NEA. That's Becky Pringle.
That's right.
And just so you know, Madam President, my family goes back with NEA 80 years.
Wow.
NEA, yeah, the teachers of my family, my grandparents, any 80 years.
Wow.
And then now you of United Steelworkers. So that's your thoughts about this historic moment. And what difference does that make in the Federation, in the overall collective labor table, to have you all represented in that way?
I think it's 2025. That's what I think.
Okay.
I think it's 2025. And I think the shift that you're seeing in leadership at that executive council table, you know, for the AFL-CIO and just writ large, all those labor leaders who are all my friends and folks that I look up to and I value so greatly, it is just a reflection of the fact that we are in 2025 and the labor movement has changed as the demographics of workers in this country has changed, and we reflect that. Leadership should always reflect who is being led. Always. We should always look like the people that we represent. And, you know, for our union, I can speak for the steelworkers, you know, it's not just me, you know, it's not just me, but the board that is going to take over here on March 1st will be our most diverse board in our union's history, where there will be two Black people, one being me as an international president, one our current international vice president of human affairs, three women, two Hispanic men. So it's the change is happening across our union, and it's powerful. And I think it's really important for our members to see that our union, the leaders of this union, reflect them. And listen, we got more work to do because there are other demographics that we represent that are not reflected in the leadership. And time will bring that change. But for each of us who are stepping into this moment, it is not about us alone. It is about what we represent, and it's about showing what is possible to our members who look like us. I better not be the last Black international president of this union, but I'm opening the door so that any other knows what is possible. And that is what this moment is about. For all of the presidents that you named, it is about making sure that we are continuing to push this movement in a way that it needs to be pushed, so it is more reflective of the working people in this country, and we make sure that they know what is possible, so they keep driving and they keep fighting and they keep stepping up like the way we have.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
We've all done it. Stock our fridge with good intentions, only to sacrifice nutrition for convenience. Keep your body and mind nourished with whole body meal shakes from Kachava. It's got 25 grams of protein, 6 grams of fiber, greens, and so much more. But it actually tastes delicious. Try one of Kachava's indulgent flavors today. Shop now through December 2nd to get 30% off your first purchase of 2 or more bags. Go to kachava.com and use code NEWS. That's KACHAVA.com, code NEWS.
Roxanne Brown, what a pleasure it has been. Let me also say a dear friend and mentor to us both is Fred Redmond. We're thinking about Fred today, too, and lifting him up. And I'm saying something, Roxanne, one of the most validating experiences of my life, years ago now, it's been a few years. I used to, for a number of years, I'd be a nighttime drive on Sirius XM. And I was in AFL-CIO convention one year, and Leo Girard came up to me. He said, Reverend Mark, I want you to know that your program is the favorite program of the steelworkers. And steelworkers listen to you every night. Now, when I heard that, you know, because I had a lot of folks on listening to me, but when I heard the real bread and butter, get your hands dirty, folk were listening to me every night. I mean, I never felt more validating the elevator. So I must really be doing, I thought I was doing all right before, but I said, I must really be. When Leo just, I never met Leo. He walked up and introduced himself to me. And that was over 10 years ago. He said, man, no, you the steelworker show. And I didn't always program for the steelworkers, but I was dealing with everyday folk and working class. He said, no, this is the steelworker show. So that meant a lot to me. And I want to pledge to you, I intend to always make myself available to be y'all show.
Thank you so much. So
whatever you need, on the air or off the air, you call on me, okay?
Thank you, Reverend Mark. I appreciate that so much. Thank you for having me today.
I was so proud of you, fellow Howard alum. Thank you. Y'all, this is really great, and it's been a great day for us all to meet together on the air, Roxanne Brown. We'll be hearing more from her because we're going to continue to report on all these issues and inform the public about what's taking place. Roxanne, God bless you, okay?
Thank you. God bless you as well. Thank you very much.
Take care now. Good to see you.
Bye-bye. All right.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter to a sister or brother who just so happens to find her or himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand. And above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.